Welcome to the Face Rocker Podcast, number 33. This week, Matt, Dez, and myself sit down with Benny and Raffy Fine, the Fine Brothers. You may know them as the creators of Kids React or My Music. We know them as two cool bros sitting down and talking about our past, our histories, our lives as filmmakers. Did you know that Benny used to be a manager at Disney World? It's crazy. Good stories from that. Also wanted to tell you about something we're doing with these guys, the creators of the Moga controllers. Basically, they're game controllers that you plug into your iPhone or Android. Either platform, it lets you, you know, have buttons and shoulder pads and analog sticks and everything. Finally, you can play phone games and not look totally insane like the guys in our Mobile Squad video did. If you head on over to MogaAnywhere.com/RocketJump and use the promo code RocketJump, you are going to get a totally sweet, totally exclusive Rocket Jump beanie. Anyway, check it out and enjoy this week's podcast.
Disney gave you employee gun training.
Yes, for the great movie Ride in the Jungle Cruise.
But they're always, they're not like,
there's blanks.
Was it like,
there's
but
blanks.
But was it like, guns? They have background checks on the Disney cruise guys?
Oh my God. Wait, hold on. Wait, but yeah. Was it like, because you know how like everything in Disney World is kind of like Disney-fied? It's like real life, but like rounded edges. Just a little smoother, just a little bit nicer, just a little more polite. Was the gun training like that? It's like, so what we're going to do is be a sausage stance and
No.
No. It was just Florida. Dade County.
But you see the people at the Jungle Cruise that are like shooting it? They're just kind of like the girls are just like, no, shoot it. Oh, boy.
Yes, I don't think they have.
I didn't get that. To do all that fun. Well, the most fun job was Tower of Terror. That was my favorite hourly job.
But what did you do there?
Oh, the ride. I worked their ride.
Oh, okay. So you're sitting there being like,
so I'm
tug,
there. I still
tug, check the seatbelts.
Well, yes. Well, when I started there, it was all lap bars. There were no seatbelts at the time.
But all you do is just point a camera and just shoot film.
I've always wanted. Well, I've always wanted one of the seatbelts to just go out, and then they're like, and then you just close the door and just stare.
A lot of times, people would jump back and be like, "Wait!" But I never did that. I was more subtle usually. Or if I'd have to wait, and like I'd be like, "All right, see you. You know, thanks for dropping in," and then like move to the side, and then crap, I can't stand the lift because the other one's waiting. Then I'll peek my head back in and be like,
psychological
terror. And then I'd be like, well, apparently I have to entertain you for a while. Anyone change their mind? Oh, no, I'd be like, so any final questions? And then usually someone would. And be like, I didn't actually care. It was a formality.
Is it all pre-written material?
Some of it is, but it's a guide. It's
Jungle
not like
Cruise.
Jungle Cruise, they started being very specific
actually,
with
like,
it. The Tower of Terror is wrong, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, really?
Welcome to the Tower Hotel. Oh God, I'm trying to remember.
Do they give you like here's the premise for this next segment, and you can make it your own?
Yeah.
Or is it like you have to stick to the script?
It depends where you work. Like at the safari, like you had to stick to the script.
Well, because you never know. The safari have different animals at different times.
So you know and I still know. I know that they've changed it recently, but you need to learn all the animal facts. So I know everything about African animals from working there. Everything. Any other area? No. But African animals, I know all about.
What's your favorite fact about?
Oh, about what?
A
bongo?
What's his favorite animal?
Hold on.
Oh, copy.
About meerkats.
Oh my God, meerkats are at the Pangani Forest Trail. Meerkats have a society where there's a sentry. There's always going to be one meerkat, even in zoos, that is standing up and guarding, and it's going to make a little cry if they see a predator come by.
This is incredible.
There's always a meerkat on sentry.
The entire podcast is just the African animal facts.
I can tell you all about this.
You guys can take that idea. That's a fantastic podcast. And then you get a little jungle tribal music starting, and it's like, dun, 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 and it's like a safari music going.
That's exactly what people expect. What's crazy is the animal.
That's exactly what they want to hear about us.
The animal care people, though, they were such snakes because, like, even though
figuratively?
Figuratively.
Oh,
but I was the manager, and so I'm supposed to know these things, but then you're never supposed to go off book, and you can't give incorrect animal facts. The zoologists, like, get really mad that they're out with the real animals.
Back up a second. The Disney zoologists, all three of them?
Oh, there's so many. Look, the Animal Kingdom is a zoo.
I know it's supposed to be.
The advertising, though, was not a zoo.
I know.
It's not a zoo.
But can we
that.
It's but a weird thing to advertise.
It really was.
Yeah. It was not a zoo. Well, no, don't worry.
Well, because Walt himself had a whole huge thing about like he hated zoos and he hated like mm-hmm. that whole. And that was like that was I think probably a
part of it. Also, was people would say, "I don't want to go to the animal kingdom. It's just a zoo." And so they would try to say, "It's not the zoo. It's much more than just the zoo."
So they have to say that the accent.
Well, it was. It was an African guy in the commercials. They would go, "Oh, it's not the zoo."
He really did.
A bunch of white guys around the table cracking up.
We have to find this clip.
I guarantee you it's on YouTube. Not the N-A-H-T-A is like it was spelled like an African word. No, yes, man. Not the zoo.
No way. Yeah. Well, can you clear up
zoo,
with your
kingdom.
Copious Disney experience? Could you clear up
We need
up
to go to
questions?
Disneyland together.
I know. Like because
we do.
Yeah, because you keep, by the way, you keep telling me this.
I know.
You're like, every single
years.
Time. You're like, oh, I got stories, man. Like,
I do have stories.
But I do want, something cleared up, okay? What, okay.
Oh God!
They
what is
say
it? What
it's a zoo, and they say
be.
That okay. you know it's a working zoo. They got zoologists and doing research. What actual research? Because I've never seen like science came out with a paper today from the Disney zoologists who revealed
well,
that's like the behavior.
Well, it depends.
It's like nothing.
They're not actually doing research.
The
there.
Animal? Yes, they are. The animal care
on
team.
On what?
Is,
what do you know?
Like the Disney, the Animal Kingdom. I believe. Oh, what's the number?
What does it matter anyway? Next.
I just got to go for free for like 10 years. So that's all I.
That's
about.
Amazing.
No, they. There's been more successful elephants. Like bred in captivity more and right rhinos at Animal Kingdom than any other zoo in the country. Like,
why don't they need to make a well they can't make a big deal of that. They're like,
they
hey.
Talk about it like it was a big deal when we shipped their white rhino back to the wild or something, and like the Living Seas, the aquarium that I also worked at for a while there, they like rescue manatees get injured in the coast of Florida and they get rehabilitated at the Living Seas. Like, so
you worked
really,
there for 10 years?
Parts of 7 years full time, 3 years seasonal.
You can tell you can just tell even 2.5 years I still have that like Disney like you have the whole Disney vibe. Like if somebody comes out of Warner Brothers, they're not like, dude, Warner Brothers actually like if you work at Disney,
the
you got the
parks.
Cool you got so much of the Kool-Aid
well,
for so long.
He's like multiple times through this conversation he has said we.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And he's like, good going, you know, we know. Have the most white rhinos,
bro.
But this is horrible stories too at the same time. Like there was his why can't I remember his name? It was everyone's favorite giraffe. He'd been there forever, and this is gonna be really sad in a second. But it was this
Jeffy. Jeffy the giraffe.
Oh god, what was his name? It was very African. Oh well. But I ended up finding out about it.
Very
that
African.
They ship it was like zoos trade animals all the time, blah blah blah.
It's like Pokemon.
It was no, that was the yes, like, but on his
that's
way
that's exactly what it's like.
On
fancy
the trip
zoo.
Over, like the main giraffe from Disney's Animal Kingdom died, broke its neck traveling. And
like
we
the
were,
hangover.
We were all devastated. It's horrible. And there's two gorillas that I worked with that are now in the Los Angeles
you
Zoo.
Work.
Oh, no king. Yeah. Do you visit them? And
went,
are they like, yo,
once.
What's up?
He totally flipped out and was like, we have to take pictures. I have to send them back.
I did send them back. And when I
went, and I took pictures.
And then when I went back, all the pictures I took were hanging up in the break rooms because all the animal care people were like, oh, because they were born
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big deal. I will see those two gorillas forever and they won't remember me. But
what happened
them.
When the draft died? Like, how did they announce
well,
it to
Well, it actually became a new
They bring everybody
Well, it became a news story. It became a news story that was a little bit national in terms of, oh, a giraffe died on the way, and then it got back to me. It wasn't here. But like, oh, no, not. And I used to know his name. But not, I'm like, not that giraffe.
I like the other giraffe.
I like the idea of, like, we're calling a meeting. And it's like all the Disney employees are like sitting like, what's this about? And like Mickey Mouse waddles on stage. Like, and he slowly takes off his head,
oh,
and
God.
It's like Bob Iger underneath.
You know, what did happen once when I was working Fantasmic Crowd Control? So, and there's the springboard in the beginning where, like, Mickey will fly up from the bottom, and then the pyrotechnics come out of his fingers. I don't know if you've seen Fantasmic, but he flew up. And
it
well,
is quite a
he,
sight to be
No, but after that description, I absolutely have to.
So he flew up, and it's always, and well, he, she, that was inside of it, but flew up, and then landed and tore like all the ligaments in her knee.
Whoa.
And this was like right in front of all the guests, and the
Whoa.
Show started, and it's like, and then Mickey goes down. Everything turns off, the house lights go on, and they end up, and this is how it is, they're giving aid to Mickey,
oh,
will not
no.
take the head off.
No, you can't.
So it's lying on the side, and then like a football game, Mickey's like giving the thumbs up. They take him away, and the show was canceled for the night. Everyone was pissed, and then a coworker of mine got fired because when people were asking what happened, it's like Mickey died.
No,
said the cast
no
member,
way.
And then got fired.
No,
yeah,
you can't say yep. that. You
Whoa.
Can't say that.
Mickey died.
You know, I know. That was a joke. Like yep. anywhere.
And there's only
All
one
of
Mickey.
Us just said, we're like, that's over the line.
There's only one Mickey, guys. There's only one. I remember when we so many stories. When we opened Mission Space, we had Space Mickey and Space Goofy. But the monorail is an eye shot of certain areas of the ride. Oh, so yeah. It became, they had to move him way inside, interfering with our line horribly. But why? Because you can't risk seeing Mickey at the Magic Kingdom then on the same monorail trip, Mickey there.
It's like never allowed.
It's a mono Mickey experience.
Yep. Two Mickeys are getting close to each other.
Can't let it happen. You go to Mickey's house in Toontown, there's three doors, but you always go through one door, but you might go through a different door every time, because if you opened all three doors, three Mickeys are in there.
So what if you took a phone with Skype and like video chatted Mickey, and they're like, oh, my friend is in the other side of the park too, and then they turn their phone to their Mickey? Will like three Disney like suited employees just like fingers to their earpieces, just like, we got situated, code blue.
No, that's a paradox.
Apparently they're not very good at these things. When the Escape from Tomorrow movie somehow got filmed completely inside the theme parks. You heard about that?
Right.
Yeah, like somehow they didn't realize a movie was being made.
So believe it or not, the guy who did sound design for Video Game High School is the guy who also did sound design on that movie.
I don't believe it.
It's just like, that's ridiculous.
Why would I believe it?
Someone else that I guess. There's a makeup person that was working on someone's shoot that was like, I was the makeup for that movie. Like, well, who was working on this thing?
They
had like a legitimate crew?
Yes, and the stories you hear, they're like running and hiding in various places and then running out and never they get their lines
very,
in certain
like,
ways.
Amateur thrown together.
And they had to film it in, well, I haven't seen it yet, and I'm sure it is what it is, but I remember even hearing they'd have to film one side of the coverage on one day and the sun would be in a different spot, so they'd have to go back out to do it the other side. But I'm just like, how do you not notice? How do you not notice a movie's being made?
Well, what it was so they lavved up everybody before they got in.
And the cameras don't look like cameras. Camera. So
that's a verb.
And they would say things like, I remember he was saying that they would just sit on Small World to get like a segment for that. They just did eight times and nobody cared.
See, and that's like, the thing. Well, that's so funny, because I worked at
it was
like Small 20
World. Long.
And I probably, you know what? I probably wouldn't have noticed or said anything if someone was just writing it over and over and over again. There were the people that did that. There were people
just like, that's just the Disney.
Well, there is this guy. There was guy Kenny.
Oh God.
Who would ride? He rode Mission Space every single day. He would come to the park morning to night and just ride Mission Space until morning to night. And then we realized he would keep track and be like, it was his 500th ride, and we got him like a prize or like a picture.
Wait, is this like an employee?
It's a guest. But now he works at the park somewhere. But there was a biker guy that came to that did the same thing at the Rock and Roller Coaster, and to the point that people just let him in without waiting.
To be fair, Rock and Roller Coaster is a good one, though.
Pretty rocking.
It's pretty rocking.
Oh, God. I'm trying to remember because all of my spiel's over there, too. I was a horrible cast member there.
Oh, Rock and Roller Coaster, the little video with Aerosmith at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Marino is
he's the guy. He's the DJ.
And you're sitting there, you're like, the dude from Party Down?
And Ileana Douglas.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's hey, weird. Hey, what's up? Hey, how you doing?
Oh, my God. This is...
And
this
then Steven Tyler gives the shocker symbol.
Oh, that's right.
The most I've ever learned about Disney.
I can go on and on.
This was a Disney.
Never ending.
This was like a Disney info dump. In like a single, just just, it was ridiculous. That was like, anyway.
So you went to Disney. Where did you go to college?
I went to college at, first at Dickinson College and then in Pennsylvania. Then at Hunter College in New York City.
He was a college baseball player at first.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's what I thought I was going to do first. Outfield. Right field.
I cut the ball sometimes.
Some people hit it to me sometimes. But yeah, that was the original, like, oh, that's what I'm going to do. And then, like, quickly was like, oh, this is just awful. Like, when you get to college, it becomes way too serious. Mm-hmm. And it was just like this. And you also realize that you're not as good as you hoped you were going to be.
When every person is.
Yeah, everybody else is as good as you. Yeah. You're
it's
just like, wow,
it's like when
happen.
Halo went online for the first time, and you started like playing, that. And you're just like, "Wow, I thought I was good, but turns out
I thought this is what I wanted to do." But
not even close.
And then became a filmmaker. It's just like, hey, there could be a bunch of us. And then the internet showed up, and it was like, oh shit, everybody kind of sucks on here. Nobody's a filmmaker almost at all on this place.
To be fair,
we're 10
like,
years into this digital web.
Yeah, by the way, just as I don't know if you guys know this, but this is how old school. These homies are when we were first getting courted by the multi-channel network.
Right.
Maker sends an email out of the blue to us, and we're like, okay, yeah, should we go in and talking to them? And they interviewed us, and they were the guys who were like having questions.
We've been
and bouncing
everywhere.
Maker.
They were at Maker, and they interviewed Brandon and me for like, and we were like, hey, so what do you think about this and that? And they were just like, okay. And I was like, answering questions. And I was like, it was so weird.
Yeah.
It was an interesting time. But it was, because at that time we were maybe, maybe 100,000 subscribers, but it wasn't really about, at that time period when we were there, it wasn't about our channel much anymore, and it wasn't, and even the idea of what is now known as a multi-channel network was not,
that wasn't even
the original plan,
I will say,
and was not what we envisioned
like
for it to become.
Channels.
And, but we were running production and creative for everyone that was over there in the beginning, and then you guys became a, oh my god, who are these guys type thing, but that was towards the end of our time there, not too long after that.
Which was an interesting time to even talk to, because we were kind of like,
quite telling you everything.
You guys even be like, can we talk to you guys like off the rec? Like, can we talk to you guys like just in a phone call outside of the office? And we were like, I don't know if we can do that.
Well, I will remember. I do remember that they were right next to Makers moved their offices. Like, they do it like every few months. It's ridiculous. But they were right by the Costco in Playa del Rey, and it was like just like one block away. And I remember going in and being like, yo, it's lunchtime. Y'all want to get some Costco pizzas and some hot dogs? And like the entire office was just like, what? What's that? I'm like, Costco. It's right across the street. Get some pizza and hot dogs. It's cheap. It's like $1.50 for a hot dog. And everyone's like, no, it's okay. I'm like, I'm not fucking.
Well, they're probably weird out because you didn't work there and you just burst in. And you're like, hey, let's go to Costco.
Well, their reaction.
Let's go to the supermarket. You guys want hot dogs? For lunch.
What is he doing?
Well, that reaction, I was just like, screw this place. These guys are all squares. Non Costco loving dudes and dudettes.
How did you get to film in the first place? Were you film guys or you're like,
I guess the quick
early
story,
radio, like
early
radio
on,
shows
this was what, in the 80s, but we, you know, those little cassette tape recorders that you're supposed to take notes on, like mental, like note to self type stuff.
Yeah.
So my dad had one of those
piano lessons on those.
Yeah.
So that I could review that.
I recorded Simpsons episodes. So I could listen
just
to the
audio?
Simpsons.
Just
the audio. And Rugrats.
Wow.
And Rugrats. I watched Rugrats.
The brilliant scripting of Rugrats.
Wow. Rugrats, the first four seasons. I'm going to tell the movie. It's amazing.
What about the cartoon they did when they grew up?
Not as good. Yeah.
That's nerdier than me. Jeez.
Really? You never record it?
We use that to do chipmunk voices and talk really slow.
Yes.
And
play that
bit inside. Awesome. But I would take those and like I loved Big Trouble in Little China. It was my favorite movie as a kid. And so Jack Burton, you know, Kurt Russell would always be talking to his CB. So I would pretend I was him. And then that turned into interviewing everyone on our block, which turned into I'm doing voices on this thing and doing a radio, a little show on this tiny recorder.
Yeah.
Then fast forward a little bit, use my bar mitzvah money to get all this audio equipment, and I made all these long. Sometimes it was just talk radio with me doing like four characters and roping him to do it too. Yeah. Sometimes it was music and it was like countdowns and like it was all radio show world. Then we got a video camera and then it became sketches. And we recently
What was the first video camera?
Oh god, it was a VHS-C camera.
Ooh,
so like you put the little tape into the VHS player.
Upgrade. Very nice.
Awesome.
So we had that. We made a lot of stupid little things.
Two VCR ads.
Well, that came later, but I did do that.
I did go to college for a little bit.
Some of the TV production classes I took, I ended up doing it was like VCR to VCR to camcorder, and then I would somehow get the old Mac Performa that I had, the Mac Performa 575, to hook up to the VCR so I could do titles and like open AppleWorks and like get a giant like title screen to go
you know
to
what's
go
crazy
out
is
to
that,
there.
Like just thinking about how that would work right now with all of our copious knowledge.
Oh, it's wild.
I can't even imagine how that works. How would you get a computer to talk to a VCR?
And why did we do it? And it's also the type of thing I look back being
difficult.
Like, oh, how would I ever do that? And I remember learning the hard way, like, man, you better make a copy of this VHS tape before you start editing because you'd be off. Because you'd even set it, and it would still be a second off, and then you lost that second of footage forever. Because I'm like, oh, right, I should have made a copy of that before I edited this whole entire thing. Then it would take... And even now you say editing takes forever even now, but that really took forever. It was like,
I remember, you know what it was? Because I remember tape-based stuff, like mini DV stuff, and being like, all right, log and capture takes an hour.
Yeah.
Yep. Set it to go get some food.
Hope it works. When you come back and stop when your time code was wrong. And then it's like recorded the same thing seven times.
And then I remember thinking very distinctly, being like, if there's only a way to just get these clips on the computer, how much easier would that be? Oh, well. And then now that it is that way, it's like, it's still like, oh, well, I mean, at the time, I'm like, well, I'd have no excuse. I have no excuse. I could just edit right away. It'd be so much faster. Now it's like you have the clips track. I guess I could drag this folder over to this folder, I guess. Fine.
Oh, load time of that moving into that.
Yeah, exactly, right?
What were we talking about?
Oh, right, how we got into film. Right, from there...
I mean, you could skip. I mean, we ended up basically always making stuff with, like, all of our action figures. We made a bunch of feature films with our action figures. And then we made a live-action feature. And pretty much we got into wanting to do even live-action through Kevin Smith. It was watching Clerks and, like, the low-budget stuff and getting in film festivals. And everybody critically acclaimed. We were like, whoa, like, we could maybe do that because we're already doing stupid shit. Like, we love that humor. Why not make something? And so we ended up making a live-action feature
that got into some small comedy festivals. And we realized immediately this is the worst way to try to break. It's not going to work. We know no one. It was obviously very different from the Kevin Smith Film Festival experience. And that was in 2000. We made it in 2000. It was 2001 when that was in a few film festivals. And then we split up. I ended up down at Disney, and then he went to film school.
It was like Macho Man, Hulk Hogan just splitting up.
The mega powers exploded. Everybody separated. Bad. But we were figuring out, what are we going to do? What's next?
Yeah.
And it was, even in 2002-ish, we were like, it's going to be the internet, but we don't know how to do that yet. And so we figured out over the next 2 years how to do that, decided to retrofit and reshoot and rewrite the action figure features that we had made, thinking it was niche and different.
We're completely like, why we even thought like that was possible and what could we do and how cool could that be was from looking at like Homestar Runner and like Channel 101. And we were like, oh wow, there's something new here. It's new media. Yeah. You know, like this is like not a passive experience. This is like we can all engage and we can do cool shit around our content.
Yeah.
And so that was the idea, to take the feature films, break them up, but put them around in this whole universe.
Yeah. It was way too early. It was Transmedia before Transmedia existed. It was like our website that had, we had all the QuickTime files hosting all of our files.
So you were hosting on your end.
Yes, and hoping.
How much was that?
Well, we basically never let ourselves pay more. We just let our site go down.
Well, that's what happened. The site would go down. And that was, we timed releases to try to be towards the end of month so we could carry over into the next month. So if
I would get on the phone with them and I'd be like, hey, you know, one of our videos are going viral right now. Like, you know, and, like, it wasn't called viral. Yeah. But like, one of our videos
it's getting big.
And they're like, it's going to cost like $6,000 to get more. Whoa. And it's like, it's just like, what? It's just Harry Potter
toys. For 3 more weeks. I don't care.
So that would happen here and there. But you watch it in the general, it was G.I. Joe. Hasbro shut us down after a while, for real. But it was a general's office, and like we had all this animation made where like the screen came down and then it zoomed in. So you're watching in his office. You could read a newspaper in between the month of the episode coming out to find out what's happening.
There's a voicemail that you could listen to from the characters.
Oh, God. And then when MySpace came out in the middle of all of this, I feel like the first month MySpace was there, every single G.I. Joe had a MySpace. We were doing that idea that we still do now, all the way back then. So you could be friends with all the characters.
Nobody understood what we were wanting to do.
What are you doing here with this?
And it was what it was. But it was ridiculous. That project was, it took over a year to make the trailer. It was 3 hours and 20 minutes of action figures shot, not stop motion, shakemation we call it, where essentially you don't
see
our hands.
It's the same as our Lost parody.
The same as the Lost parody. Yeah. It's like, hey, how's it going? But it was to scale. So we built all these little sets, and we're 3¾ in scale. We're lying in the dirt like for months and months and months. I mean, it took like 2 weeks to record the audio. Like, it's still it was a good time. That series, it's sort of lives on, sort of.
Yeah, it's out there on the web.
Some people find it and what's great, I'll even talk about, people are gonna go search for this now. It's very, very dirty in comparison to anything we do
now. Hasbro shut us down for a reason. I mean, we were doing some
but
crazy
someone
stuff
found it and
toys.
Uploaded it not too long ago on YouTube, the full 3 hour plus version. And because when we got cease and desisted, I'll just tell the story. We got cease and desisted, they gave us like 10 days to take it down. And so we did, but we like blitzed the internet, told everyone to download it. And we threw it onto torrenting sites.
Yes.
And so it's still occasionally people find it there. And they said they found one person seeding it. And they downloaded it over the course of who knows how long and then uploaded it to YouTube. And I think this description was like long before they did React. They did the greatest thing the internet has ever had. G.I. Joe, the epic saga. But the way it's titled makes it seem like it's the G.I. Joe real movie sequel.
Right.
So it has like 250 or 300,000 views. And there's all these dislikes. And they're like cursing. I hate what is this shit? They're all like so angry.
Oh my god.
And so that actually is kind of bad that you actually like the real G.I. Joe movie more than the movie.
But in a way though, you've gotten your revenge on them, haven't you? Right?
Hey, I mean, whatever. It was what it was. I still love that thing, though. Looking back, I'm like, why did we do some of that stuff? But it was like, you can do whatever you want, it's the internet.
Yeah.
Hey guys, how's it going? Jimmy Wong, aka Ted from VGHS here, telling you to check out shop.rocketjump.com. We've got brand new merchandise like iPhone cases and iPad decals to shirts, Blu-rays, and posters, including brand new Season 2 designs from our friends at Danger Brain. There's also the incredibly popular VGHS hoodie, and some of our older shirts are on sale for a great price. So make sure you check it out right after this podcast at shop.rocketjump.com. Thanks so much, guys.
It's one of those things where Well, I mean, it's one of those things where, because you guys mentioned something that I hear a lot sort of early on from people doing videos, which is the hosting and the, what do you do with this and how do you even display it and put it out there? And I think, I'm curious, how did you guys find, like, YouTube? What was the first YouTube experience?
Ooh, it really started as, like, looking at just popping onto this website, because there were just a bunch of these websites that were showing up that were having hosting.
That's right.
Embedding changed a lot. Like, the idea of being able to embed was like, oh my God, like, we don't have to host anymore. But then it still became the thing of, like,
but you still need to download RealPlayer.
Oh, God, I hate it.
Well, I remember us sending physical tapes to Adam Films before they were bought by Comedy Central, and iFilm, and you'd send them tapes to get submitted, hope they would put you up on their website.
And it's like originally, like, The Lonely Island, they were big on iFilm, like, their first place that they were big on, and we were like, oh man, we gotta get our
And then Rever was the thing we all adopted earlier than YouTube, because that was the first thing that paid anything.
Because if they clicked at the end of Rever, you got like a quarter, and it was like, whoa, that's insane. But I remember YouTube just being like, you went there, and it was just like, upload home movies.
That was YouTube
beta,
I think.
That was like the idea of the homepage. They didn't think of it any more than that. And then first time that I fully thought, okay, we should do something about this YouTube, because we were already a top 10 comedian
in MySpace. Thing. At the time, you have to realize that, like, YouTube was getting bigger, but MySpace was bigger or an equal length at one time to them in terms of video views.
Gigantic.
And
you
VO.
Could get so many views on MySpace.
Music, too. Music views out of control on MySpace.
And so there was a million YouTubes that all had decent viewership at the time. VO, Grouper, that is now Crackle. And God, what else was around? Daily Motion, which is still around, was a pretty decent place. There was Motion.
I love that Daily Motion basically turned into the, like, and this is where you get the Russian dash cams and the people dying. One back, we got you covered.
Daily Motion. But all those things were there, and YouTube was just one of many. And so we were on every single site for all that time.
Yeah.
And then we were like, and even looking at the time with YouTube and some people that had gone there earlier than we did. Mm. There was still that feeling of, but this is our website. And we had a decently trafficked website back in the day. And we're like, if we're going to send everybody to YouTube, then they're not coming to our website. So we were a little bit late to adopting it and I'll let you take it from there.
Until the twofold thing of, one, seeing again The Lonely Island, because we were just kind of watching them and seeing what was going on. And we saw that YouTube, like, was starting to feature them in various ways and getting them on their homepage. And it was resulting in not just a lot of views, but this thing called subscribers that, like, all of a sudden was resulting in, when they would put up another video, people would watch it. And so when we started to go, okay, how does that work? We put up a video there, and we'd be like, okay, let's see, and we'll market that, try to get people to go back to our YouTube page instead of our website. And people started subscribing, and we were like, well, when we put up another video, what happens? We were like, oh, crap, there's like all these people that come back
and
watch your
video. And that was a huge difference,
video.
Because everywhere else, the whole point before YouTube was really big, the point wasn't to make content necessarily for your audience, because there was no way to keep an audience. That function didn't exist.
Right, right.
In MySpace, it did a little bit. But it was, I'm going to market this by what is the editors of all of these websites going to want to feature, and then I can get a million views on VO, I can get a million views on MySpace, but if my next video comes out and they don't put me back in the homepage, zero. Kind of like Yahoo.com now. But
how history repeats itself to those who not study its machinations.
And so YouTube was, whoa, if we actually get a hit here, we don't need to get featured at all.
People come back.
People are there, and we start actually growing fans. And that's also where it became a shift of, like, because at the time also there was all these sites that were paying some people for content, and it was like, wait, and after a while it became, this doesn't make sense anymore, we're just helping their brand, versus I should be taking this time to make content for myself to grow our audience. And a lot of our peers at the time that got bigger deals than we did, and I would say that it's a blessing in the past, because we would always be frustrated being like, we've been around, we have the same views or better, and, like, you know, why do these people get the huge Sony deal? Why did we only get a pilot with Adam.com? Why didn't we have a full series? But due to going through that experience, we kept our YouTube going. Well, a lot of our peers got that deal, were getting
and
money,
they made it
pre-partner program, and stopped YouTube. And a lot of those guys are still directing and doing things for other people now, but they lost their own audience.
So I'm always curious about this, because you guys were around, like, sort of the .com. Well,
no, it was a little after.
A little bit after, but here's my question, right? What were those deals like? How much were they?
Well, it depends. The first,
like, as in, if you were going to make, like, a series,
it depends.
With Crackle.
Let's go earlier.
Adam?
The first things we ever were paid. We were paid $250 to do something in 2005
for Heavy.com.
And it was the Burger King thing,
wasn't it?
The Burger King where we flipped off all the fast food restaurants.
Yep. I remember that video.
I was the Burger King.
So in like a bathrobe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was me. That was old. Yeah.
Dude, we're digging deep right here, man.
That was $250 with heavy.com.
And then, and then Brick a long time ago paid around $750.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's what they were
owned
at.
You.
That was Benny and Britney Spears.
That's a whole other story. That's a hard video to find.
I made sure of it.
But then Brick started paying more, but then they owned the video. It was a whole
weird thing.
Shifted.
Yeah.
But then it depended where you were. Super Deluxe, which was, you know, Turner's thing for a while, they were just flush with money for a while.
So much money.
And they just were paying way too much for content. And I feel like it was even
And they were always giving the money out to, you know, comedians, up and coming alt comics, like just like people that were just, who knows, they might be the next big thing, but they're not there yet. So they're just giving them like $10,000 a video.
It ranged on the low end, if it was sketches and stuff, like the $2,000 a video, to the high end of $10,000 to $15,000 a video.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the range is.
If it was like a series.
Well, not in 2005, but around, we're talking like 2007-ish. Like,
wow.
2007, well, they were all trying while YouTube was rising. YouTube got bought, right when YouTube got bought by Google is right when that was kind of happening a lot. And Crackle was financing huge amounts of shows once Sony bought Grouper.
I forgot, what was like Bannon Way? What was the...
Well, Bannonway was like a...
I know, but that was a Lexus-sponsored thing. Like,
I forget how much it was. They never tell you for sure.
I remember hearing things like Adam Films early on was doing ridiculous permanent rates. Like, it was something like... correct me if I'm wrong. For the series on Adam, it was something like... It was in the grands per minute, which was like crazy.
For the right comedian.
Right.
That they were doing
once,
it with.
That was right when Comedy Central bought it. So like there was all this idea, and Disney had a whole thing called Stage 9 that they put millions of dollars into that never even went anywhere. They had like one show that ever aired.
Oh, well, do you remember Squeegees that they put on the YouTube homepage because they made a deal with YouTube to get it onto the homepage. And that thing was just like I don't even want to know how much money. That was way more than even that. They were making like television shows on the internet.
Typically,
they
even
no
now, they don't.
It. It wasn't
they
funny,
don't know how to get
good.
Audience for it. They don't know what they're doing, and it was just trying to put, you know, what is it, square hole in a round? Whatever. I don't know that expression.
Square peg
in a round hole. I don't know.
Triangle.
Yeah. Wrong does, size thing in the wrong size.
History
orifice.
Does kind of endlessly repeat itself, though, when it comes to people coming in from more traditional companies, putting a lot of money into people, thinking, oh, if all of us can do it, then if there's some person that's established
a writer from television,
then they're going to knock it out of the park, and they don't realize there's that they should be partnering with us if they want to try to do something like that, and not in the use way, and like, let's maybe make something together, otherwise give us the money.
But again, it's kind of been an odd blessing because we've all had to kind of figure out how to do it our own way and not be leaning on them, or because again, all the peers of ours that were in that situation ended up losing a lot of power or not having that steady ability to produce content compared to, I think, what the handful of us have been able to do as production companies to move forward, make what we want, and try to get some of that power back into our own hands.
And I guess that's the question now that I feel like we've even talked about. It's like, where does this go for what we're all trying to do beyond being able to do one Video Game High School or one My Music versus multiple that we all want to be doing all the time?
Because we were talking about, you guys came to the set and we were talking, it was actually the first time
we met.
I think just you.
It's just me,
I met you later. But yeah, it was very much about that. And I think we even talked about, like, what's your end game, and you keep talking about control and having that stuff, and that's the same thing. Like, you would, I remember back in the day when you and Brand were first starting, it was always audience before, like, the initial money. Mm-hmm. Like, always build a subscriber before then, and before, and you know, so on. So, what do you guys see going forward? Like, is the plan then to try to jump into traditional media, or continue to wait as traditional media starts flowing into our world?
We always, like, for now, we're firm believers in both. We want to have shows on television while we're also making TV shows on...
And choosing what things would be online. Something we'd pursue television for versus, no, this would make more sense to not do or not give up as much control over. Because that's really even the thing where it's a great place to be in the sense of, like, you know, I really love this, I want to control this idea, forget it, versus, you know what, this is a great idea.
Yeah, there's definitely ranges that of your own projects. So you're like, we can let this one go.
Exactly. Really, and it's still going to be great. It's not like we don't love that project, but it's like, it's not the same thing. There
somebody else can go and, like,
write that.
Yeah,
you don't only have
that.
One
somebody,
idea.
Right, exactly.
Benefit, yes.
But so that's become, I mean, it's just so tough. Like, it's,
We believe that at least with the way that the power shift is right now, or even where audience is right now, I mean, I like, outside of like what you guys have been able to accomplish with VGHS, like, I'd say more of outside of that, because the numbers there are like incredible, where
you guys noticed, like, in terms of long form narrative content online, with the exception of what you guys have done, there's no precedent. Like, it's you guys and then people that have done okay, you know, like, and
well, I mean, that's one thing that we admire about you guys is that you have a very similar idea of wanting to create good quality long form, not, I wouldn't even say traditional, just storytelling,
right, right,
in a real narrative way on the internet, mm-hmm, as opposed to, I feel like a lot of web series are more or less, they're either IP, they're like, hey, let's do a Halo and a Mortal Kombat thing, and right, not to diss those projects, they all have their own reasons for existing. Well, I mean, they it's stuff to fault thing that's clearly designed as a marketing device. It's not, right, it's not a traditional, right, it'd be like, oh, Mortal Kombat's not a good TV show. It's like, well, because frankly, it's not really TV. It's a thing to
kind of,
you know,
it's kind of try and pump up this Mortal Kombat thing so they can do a movie. Yeah,
yeah. There's this very, because still the cost. I mean, you guys know for my music, the even doing it cheaper, the cost of doing something like that is so massive.
Yes.
Not to mention time costs. If you're talking about actually writing, yeah, and actually trying to take
the beginning
time
to end, it's never ending. And again, for the economics that all of us are playing in, that to the average person that doesn't really get it thinks, and that's why I love that you have your breakdowns that you have. But yeah, even then, when you look at the breakdowns, people probably still look at it and go like, what? That costs that? And then you're like, oh, what do you mean that costs that? That costs this compared to what it really costs. Yeah. Are you crazy?
People don't understand
for years
that.
We were, all the way through production, we're like, it's 6 episodes, 3 minutes each. The 6th episode comes out, like, half the comments are like, dude, Freddy, you're so freaking lazy. What the hell? 6 episodes for all that money?
Yeah.
Like, how could you only make six? Make another one for us now. Wow. It's like, one, it takes a year. We don't make one.
Well,
in
then there's the occasional great comments where they're like, hey, so next like, week for that episode, could you, I want to see a story from this and this. It's like, yeah, next week. What are we doing?
No problem.
Here?
No problem. We're shooting it week to week.
Yeah,
no problem.
We write them on Monday and Tuesday. We shoot on Wednesday.
See, that's what you do. But see, but we, that makes, that's why we do what we do. We have our content that we do make weekly that's part of it, so you can answer those questions. That's what
trying to satisify the audience.
No, it's shocking how much content you guys have when I was back there. My music, it's like,
I don't even
know
what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's insane.
But like, my feeling, at least with how things are going now, is that, like, and what I'm hoping for in the part of the power shift and being able to have more ownership and, you know, being able to have more on the back end and everything as you're trying to grow and partnering up with companies, is I think that we're going to, currently with where we stand, we have to be able to show, annoyingly to some degree, that we can do this television thing. Yeah. And so people will want to work with us more and believe in our online project that we want to do that's the same exact stupid thing.
Yeah.
But right now, I don't think that's going to be forever, but I think in helping to get more networks and more executives and more producers, more writers, more showrunners to start understanding that what we do is exactly what they do, is being able to be like, hey, I've been doing this for years over here. Yeah, I'm playing in your field now. Can we freaking do stuff together finally, because you never want to otherwise.
Well, at least you have to.
That.
Well, at least you have to play the same format. You have to play like, oh, this is 22 minutes. This is your. You get it now. And what's nice is that, you know, when we were talking about season two, we're like, TV length. Let's just try TV length. And
let's just prove we can do literally TV.
Right.
I mean, and so it was one of those things where it's like, can we? Are people gonna sit around and watch it? It's like, oh, I hope Netflix and Hulu did that groundwork, because we kind of relying on their them first, priming a group of people to be
YouTube
used to watching
do
things.
It.
it's also just still the economics of it. It's just like, you won't get the top showrunners and writers right now who are already, if you're already working in traditional media, it's going to take a lot.
Yeah,
to
that's
go,
the constant
to go,
problem.
To go backwards.
Yeah, but and that's the thing. It shouldn't be looked at as backwards.
Exactly.
But
economically,
of course,
that's what they see.
And that's just the problem.
And then when they do, they always, and then it's like, what also is weird is, like, in a weird way, traditional media hurts online far more than online does, because they have stuff like, Tom Hanks does a thing for Yahoo.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks. It's terrible. Why? Because he's doing four HBO shows. Like, he's doing the next like Band of Brothers. You think he's like really caring about this?
Well,
they're fun
what
hobbies.
Was that? Electric?
Well, it's
like an animated.
Electric
it's like,
City,
yeah,
whatever.
It's like a fun
it's,
hobby
it's
thing.
It's hobby
they do.
Slash whatever you want to do, guys. Because it's your free whatever. It's like, this is, you know, that's not the way
they,
it's always going to work. If anything, you got to make something that makes sense to build an audience for yourself. Then do that thing that's for fun.
But that's the thing. Even they all don't understand that there's actually like something that works. There's actually like formulas, and there's actually things that the audience that you can build, or even if you don't have an audience, that actually works online. There's like certain things that you are smart out of the gate.
It's like
create.
No, absolutely. It's the equivalent would be like, all right, guys, I've invented the electric guitar. Who was playing it? Now, these guys are pretty good, but hey, you, this old school, you know, acoustic player, rip it on this electric guitar. And the guy's like, ah, fine, here, I'll just make a half-assed album. All right, I'm going to go back to doing what I usually do and making tons of money doing it. It's like that's not the
and
example.
And they just squander the money, too.
Yeah.
Like, if we really saw the budgets, we'd all cry. Like the
H-Plus? H-Plus, 1 minute, like 57,000 1 minute shorts.
Oh, that's a good idea. That was a good idea back in 2003.
Like a camera in a parking lot, and I'm sure that budget was seven times
We don't cry, and they also, they don't understand how to do they look at what we do, and if they actually really broke it down, they would say it's impossible. They would actually say something like, this is not possible. Yeah. You can't, how many times have I even heard, like, well, you can't even do something on television for less than $100,000 and the absolute minimum on a crappy reality show on TV. Yep. And I'm like, give me $100,000 and I can do I can do hours of content like that's high quality content that I wish was better quality, but I can get it to a level that would be like, oh, that's pretty good. And well, it's that...
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. It's, there's a bunch of pre-assumed notions in terms of how much things cost, how much it takes to get things made, and this is the level of quality they're used to. And what's flipping everyone out is like, no, not anymore. Not with not if you do it this, not if you do it like this, not if you're smart about it this way. The fact is that every traditional is overpriced in a world where there's a lot of supply. And by supply, I mean just things that will entertain you online, like Halo, like the Halo web series. That's $7.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
$7.5 million to make the
Halo
series.
That's more per, like we do in our breakdown, that's more per half hour than House of Cards was. It's like,
oh wow,
it's like insane.
So, what about the same time? Like, you're like, oh, okay, it's a big visual effects heavy thing, and I guess I can see it. But at the same time, it's like, it's come on.
There's a bunch of kids in a forest.
And it still just a frustrating thing. Well, I'll vent a little.
Go for it.
The frustrating thing, even with something like that, or there's so many back and forth. But even the YouTube originals and like all of these things that like. You're putting people in to make, there's a big, obviously Halo's a huge franchise, it's a less risk or whatever, but all these people that got given all this money to make all this content that we all know, God, that was a lot of money, and what was the point, or whether it's Yahoo giving a lot of money to Tom Hanks or whatever, while there's people out there like you, like us, like other peers that we have, that have guaranteed viewership and know it'll be a success, it's not such a huge risk. It's just this mind-boggling thing.
Like Corridor, like the fact that like they have issues trying to find, trying to get their like web series up. It's the same thing. It's like,
it's just,
are you kidding me?
Like, they did the Halo movie.
Exactly, and they don't realize that. That's what even for us, we're
it's
not
like the easiest thing.
It isn't this selfish thing either, where it's like I don't want to do it. I want to do it all myself. No, I don't. Like I'm all about if there's someone that I like, whether it's a comedian or some person that I'm like, I'm a fan of this person. I think we can do great things together. Let's make a show together. Use our distribution and let's show everybody how this is done.
Yeah.
And instead, it's like, no, none of you can really do this. You got to do it yourself. Find a way to do it yourself. We'll do it over here, fail, and then get bought by a major media company anyway just because of who we are, exactly. What our name is, and that we can spin our numbers in various ways.
Well, traditional media has such a support structure. Like when they talk about network notes and things like that, that obviously has problems, but that's also like how that shit gets made.
Right.
And what happens is when these guys come into the web world, they don't have that structure anymore, and everybody's used to working that way, and that's also why you get the content that you get. It's like, find this guy who's, you know, a staff writer on The Office now is the showrunner on this web series, and nobody's really watching what he's doing. He's, you know, he's a funny guy. It kind of goes through. The actors kind of dick around. The editor is the assistant. And then it just kind of, like, funnels through. It's like, here, cool. It's like, that's cute. It's a web thing.
And maybe they tried to keep a lot of the money.
Now it's The Office web series. Yeah, they try to keep a lot of the money and so on.
No, I think that to some degree of, like, even though we're all like, God, we can do this. It's all us. But, like, even with what we're all doing, I think that we all wish that we did have more money, even just to have a better structure of what things are supposed to be.
Definitely.
In the sense of that hierarchy. There's a reason
why oversight that gets lost in like crap.
There is a requirement in this moment.
I was actually going to ask about that with your experience for, because we've done videos. I mean, either whether it was like student films or YouTube for so long, VJHS was the first like. We had, you know, people come in, we had a producer come in, we had like assistant directors, and it was very, like you could talk about
thing.
Could talk about what it's like. Because obviously we were like, this is nice, it's cool to have this support structure, and then we're also finding ways like, but this, like there's certain elements of the support structure that we don't like or doesn't fit in the way.
The biggest thing is how it slows you down. Like,
it is. It's crazy when you're like literally two people that do absolutely everything, and then you're like, oh man, like I have to wait like 25 minutes for this thing that I could have shot six shots already.
Yeah.
And like all of a sudden he's just like, because I can't touch the camera. Like it's just like. You know, the weird union random stuff, but we
were No. It wasn't that crazy. But even just the idea of, like, sometimes I'd feel like, we're lit.
Yeah, I know.
And then it's like, well, and granted, you know, sometimes later on, I'll end up realizing, all right, you know,
better.
But there's diminishing returns, right?
So,
the moment
depending.
From full darkness to light is probably the most gains you'll get from lighting. But then it's like you can keep tweaking and moving this and then it's like, yeah, you'll get to a point. But if you're shooting two pages a day, sure, you can take that time.
I think that it's an evolution. You got to find the right people to work with inside the system that, at least for us, like, I want these professional people that really know what they're doing, and then there's a learning curve they go through working on something that has the low budgets that you need to move quicker, or you have a 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. world, you know, like that you get in that rhythm.
And I wonder where that would be.
But after a while, it got pretty fluid on the second season of my music. It was You guys gotta find the right people. I like.
We shared some people.
We did. Well,
Danielle and, yep, and Scripty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Random. Yeah.
It's bizarre.
But that's the thing, depending on what the roles are. But like for me, like I need a strong AD because I typically end up, if I'm not, I'm ADing and directing at the same time.
Right,
that's
right,
kind of how it's always been. Like it's not a good place to be, and I'd rather someone else tell me when I got to speed up and et cetera. But it's always interesting because I remember after season one of My Music where we had, you know, the bigger crew, and then we decided we're gonna shoot an old school sketch. Yeah. And it was literally in our apartment, and I was holding the boom, and he was running the camera, and we were like having the time of our lives. Like, it's just like, this is so bizarre, but so... It's both are fun, but they're totally different experiences.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and like I know like a VGHS with a bigger crew, and John has heard me talk his ear off with this crap. Uh-huh. But I keep coming up with really dumb, weird. I'm like, what about this? What about this? What about this? Okay, check it out. All right, guys. Last looks. Makeup goes in. They do the powder. What if the person doing the powder also did the slate? Because they're both in front of the camera. Like, she could powder them up and then click the slate. Like, what about that?
Because they're right there.
And then none of my stupid experiments will work. Like, what if we just did tail slate steak?
Well, that one could work. Just, like, you'd have to convince a makeup person, the union makeup person, to slate and then fire the slate person.
Well, then we came up with ideas like...
Well, yeah, the green screen apple box.
The green screen apple box
would just be painted in the green screen color.
I think
color.
That's a brilliant idea.
Yeah. Just leave an apple box in frames. Like, okay,
it's easier to paint. But then the other one's like all the prop guys should have like those little like it's not full shopping cart, but like those little mini shopping carts you get at Trader Joe's, like a prop cart, and it's got like three C stands on it and all the props for the C, and it's rugged all-terrain wheels.
Oh, so in the sense that they don't have to go all the way back to where they're.
Well, but also, but here's the rule. Like, here's the basic rule. Anything you bring on set that needs to be able to be carried by one person. Every object needs to be accounted for by one person's thing. So, i.e., if there's so much grip equipment that takes the two guys there three trips back and forth, no.
To be fair, most of this comes from the way we shoot action.
That's
it's
true.
Mostly, it's like we're out in the middle of the forest, and it's like, where's that gun? It's like, oh, let's go back to base camp. It's like, why? Like,
I want my guns
here!
Everybody have their guns. I don't understand. Props are just always... always not there.
They're like
I don't understand.
I don't know how that works.
They're always not there. And I also love coming to your set and looking around at certain things and then realizing, and then crew members telling me also, I'm like, but Howard is like, oh, we're gonna get rid of that later. Like the way that you guys shoot, you're like,
it's
we could just get rid of that.
So
and I'm like, I cannot fit that. We can't do that.
We
put this here because we just get rid of it.
To be fair, we get punished for it later.
No, but at the same time, but here's the thing, it's a give and take because you're gaining at the time. But here's the one thing that I noticed.
Rather gain on set.
Because we had some moments, you know, in especially this season where it was like, time is running out, we gotta move. And then it was like, we had some very seasoned people on set who had done much more work and had seen many, many more sets and many more shoots than any of us, probably all combined. But the moment it was like, no, don't worry about it, it's VFX, they all were just like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
they all looked at each other. Like, I was like, the moment I say, don't worry about it, it's a VFX shot, like, they're just like, oh, okay. No, they can't say anything.
I remember you telling me that one time, because somebody was like, because even though, one, we're both pretty nice guys, and we don't ever really scream at anybody on set, and usually we get, like, questions like, what, are you, is that the right cover? And then you were like, Matt, just ask for a green screen.
Yeah.
And so the next time it happened, I was like, don't worry about it. Can we get a green screen here? Like, oh, it's an effect. Okay, just do whatever he said.
It's such
like,
a good
like
point.
They just, oh, they don't know.
Okay.
I was reading an Orson Welles interviews, and he had the same thing. Except what he said was, just tell him it's a dream sequence.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, this the director was like,
it doesn't make sense. Why are we flipping this?
Oh, yeah, it's a dream sequence. Did you read the script? And you go, okay.
Oh, my gosh. That's
it's a dream sequence, everybody. It's fine. Just do what he says.
You guys are Orson Welles. Man. Did you experience, because when I feel like My Music and VGHS have a very similar absurdist feel sometimes, and things happen that are like ridiculous out of nowhere. Do you have certain people on your set that would question like the absurdity
all
of moments?
Of episode all 5 of the robot.
That was my favorite thing. That opening when all of a sudden we're with them and like it's like go. Like I was like, this is like the greatest thing I've ever seen.
I mean, to the point that we were questioning ourselves. Like we were being shot by him like, Freddie, what a...
I thought it was genius.
What the fuck are we doing right now?
Isn't that like season 5 we do that movie?
Well, the moment it was like I saw Clint wearing the half skirt and the white pants.
Yeah.
And I was like,
Oh wow!
And Brian comes in, like, slaps his like naked thighs, and is like, "Yeah, I pumped these nerds." I just like looked at Freddie. I was like, "It's too late, man. Like,
this train's rolling, man. This Matrix train ain't got no brakes, Matt."
No, we definitely got that a lot.
Anything with the cat too. There were so many like, "Oh, you should cover the cat like this," and like it's like, it's gonna be. We're doing a green screen element for that. And like, "Oh, okay." I'm like, "Are we?" I'm like, "No." Like, "No, we got the coverage."
Like, "Can Mel please be in that backpack while he's eating the bananas farting?"
Like, weird things.
And just getting really like not defensive, but just getting like, "Yeah, there's milk in that backpack. Can you just please put milk in that backpack?" Yeah. He's gonna eat it. I don't get why is there a question about this? And then you hear yourself what you're saying. You're like, "No wonder everybody thinks I'm a fucking idiot." Like how can you not
that's
be?
Like,
on...
And that's like the end of the day too. Like, you can't like for us because. We're kind of dopes and idiots. We can't just, it's just like we have yet to shake that. Well, especially with newer crew members.
Yeah.
When you're just like, there's just this moment where they're like, "Who are these idiots?" Like, Matt and I are walking around barefoot on set because Matt has a weird foot problem and like, I like being
that
barefoot.
I love to talk about.
You guys want to talk about it?
But I remember being like, "Man, these guys just look at us and they're just like, who are these jokers?"
Well, that's why I don't understand how, like, so, like, Dez is the complete opposite. And I remember you telling me in film school you hired a guy as a friend.
Oh, yeah.
Just for the first day of
filming.
Just for the first day of filming, you could fire him?
Yes.
Yeah. What? Like, I wish
Justin,
I
wanted to scared? Run that set that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Just let everyone know. Because you don't know. Especially when you're
Well, he was at USC Film School. Yeah, USC Film School is like, everybody's working for you.
I thought I had a little bit of a clue about what was going on. I was like, I read a couple books. I watched a bunch of movies. Now I'm in a decent school. But yeah, I heard that from some other kid. There's some grad student. Like, I heard him telling that story orientation weekend. He's like, "Yeah, man. So I fucking fired this guy." And everyone was like, "Okay."
Right. And that's the thing. Right. I hate that. People want that stuff. You ever see the footage of that you showed me of Quentin Tarantino on the set of Django Unchained?
Yeah.
Where he has like his whole crew there and he's kind of yelling at them, but then he's like, "Let's remember," and he makes the whole crew say that we get to make movies for a living. Like, something like,
"Because we all love movies.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's just like those types of things that it's just so funny that like all the things as a director and as a producer that you need to do. It's like children. It's all your kids, and you have to keep them happy in these various ways, and get behind the scenes conversations that they don't.
Oh no,
know
there's
having.
So much like, okay, this person. Oh, there's a little bit of drama here. Okay, let's smooth this out right now. And then you're just like,
everyone tells me that the set of season 2 of My Music was like high school. From what, but I kept everyone kept things from me all the time.
Oh, dude, we had the exact same thing. I hated that.
And I find things out, and they're like, "You don't know what's going on." Or I'd hear a little thing in the corner of my ear from like some of the assistants in the departments that are gossiping a little bit. And I'm like, "What is going on? Like, what kind of harassment happened back there?" Yeah. Like, it's like, why is no one telling me this?
We were having it was near the end of the shoot, but we went to father's office and got burgers with like a bunch of camera guys. And all of a sudden they were like, "Oh yeah," and then she like banged him, and then like, "Oh, there's that whole fight, and that's why the makeup wasn't there that day." I was like, "That's why the makeup wasn't there." And I was like, there's like so much going on, and then like I felt really like, "I don't want to direct. Why was I not having all this fun?" Like,
they don't tell you anything.
All this like fun interactions going on.
Our makeup department has been pitching for now 2 seasons, being like they want like to do like a documentary in the makeup room My Music. And general, how interesting that would be, especially as an ancillary piece of content. Like, that's genius. But then when I pry a little further, like, wait a second, actually, why? Maybe no sound.
Right. Because everybody spills
sound. Who knows what the hell is going on with their saying about me? Like, I gotta
know. Well, then you realize that everybody's job is like, as a director, you're like, "Oh, you know, you're treating everybody like children."
But kind their of job.
Like children. But then you realize everybody else on set's job is treat Matt and Freddie like children. Like
I know!
Like, protect the directors from everything.
Well, I've been saying those things that I say it all the time. I was joking a lot about it because one of the times, oh God, I'm remembering all these little things now where we would always forget there was a way we had to shoot Talking Heads specifically because we have 2 different angles, and if we were doing an end slate though where they're talking to camera for the end, it was a different setup, like they're going to look in one camera then the other, and the camera team needed to know when we were doing an end slate and we weren't. And so sometimes people would forget. So as I would walk by, I would sometimes tell the camera team, like, "Oh, we're doing an end slate next." Then the AD went in to tell them we're doing an end slate. The reaction was, "We already know." And then I found out that they knew from the DP who already told them before I told them. But when I told them, they're like, "Oh, yeah, oh, yeah."
Freddie tried to do all end slates one day.
Yeah.
Failed experiment.
Des was not on that board, that ship. I'll give him credit on that. Let's give Freddie a try. Des like, "Don't do it."
But you can only push the envelope of filmmaking if you're willing to tear some envelopes. Anyway, but well, here's the key that we figured out, right? Because I got a bro on the cast, and Jimmy and this is like, nobody who's working on VGHS.
No, nobody talk about this.
Nobody talk about this. But Jimmy's like my hookup in terms of like the pulse of everything. So like at lunch, I'll pull up something, Jimmy, we don't need to know. He's like, oh, okay, this. I'm like,
upset but it was good.
No, but it was good because I was able. But it was good because we were able to make a couple decisions that we had no insight
on. Let somebody out earlier, get their coverage out.
Or whatever it was, to just be like, okay, you know what?
Treat them differently.
And like, we
never speak to them ever.
Fire them.
Yeah.
Oh, Jimmy's like, you should fire this guy, Freddie. Jimmy's just like using you.
How do you know? Jimmy can be
in all the time. Jimmy's just a master manipulator.
I'm getting played.
Yeah, I think that guy who has some lines, you should just give them to me. And then you should probably fire that guy who made
three quarters of his dialogue was never written.
No, but I will say, though, we definitely had like, we had one day, there's just these two extras who were just dicks to everybody.
Yeah.
And like, everyone kept us isolated from this.
Because of breakfast, because they didn't get pancakes or something crazy stupid thing like that.
Extras,
so they were just trying to blow the set apart, you know?
Yeah. And so everyone's like, everyone's kind of just weirded out. And I'm like, Jimmy, what's up? And he's like, so there's this person, like, they're over there. But he told me the whole story. I'm like, what? So we went up, we're like, AD, I'm like, who are these guys? They're done. Fire them. They're gone. Also, call the casting agency. They don't work again. Like, go burn them.
To be fair, they were some pretty good fucking band gigs.
And they heard about
Did
you guys work with a lot of extras on? Yeah, it's pretty contained, but it feels like
it was pretty contained. But yeah, depending on the scene, we techno and dubstep rave a lot, so there's typically giant rave scenes. And we went to a school this time, so we had to fill a classroom. We ended up a lot. We ended up with a lot of fans that ended up coming in.
You guys were way better than extras.
That's like the way to go. And like some of
extras are crazy.
Yes, and they are. The one time we had to really just go full extras. You're always happy when they're normal, and there's always a few that are weirdos. And on top of that, they start stalking and like they show up later and they email you and there's one extra.
Yeah, it's insane. We had this one. There's this one extra during one of the Grand Theft Auditorium scenes. Is when Jimmy, has his homework. But like, I would like tell Jimmy something. I start walking away. She's like, excuse me. I'd be like, yeah. She's like, so like, what's my character? I'm like, what am I?
Oh God.
Ooh. And I was just like, I mean, just you're watching the game and just like celebrate. Okay. And then cut. And then next time, literally, I'd talk to Jimmy. I'd be like, all right, let's. And she's like, hey, Matt, excuse me.
Motivation.
Yeah, like this time though, like I was I playing like I was like who like just cheer. It was insane. And then eventually I was like, you just gotta move her to like.
Did they even expect each person you're gonna go to and like give them each individual?
They probably do. Like,
got angry when I was kind of like just really curious. Like, you told me that last time.
Oh my
like,
God!
What? I was like, that's all you need to do. Goodbye.
There was an extra that was always the wrong. His timing was off all the time. Like, he needed to cheer and kept cheering too early. and the footage is really funny. It's like he mid dialogue all of a sudden he turns around by himself and starts cheering. Having three straight takes.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And it seemed a little off. So I'm like, all right, whatever. I got to just get this. He's in coverage. I can't replace him now.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, and it's one of those things where you don't, again, as like that higher level, everyone insulates you in all of it.
And you can get whatever you want. And that's the other odd thing that I don't do it, but I think all the time, because I know I've been around other sets, and sometimes you see directors that are like that.
They make sure they have all the stuff.
But it's so like, it's just so funny where I talk about, where you'll hear people say things like, you see a list of, what's some crafty preferences? Maybe we can make it work. If I ask for something, like it's going to be there. Oh, and it's a weird thing to think about.
I'm
like,
still
I could
totally
literally,
uncomfortable with it.
I don't know. I don't do it. I would never. Yeah. I don't even want to do it. But it's like, I literally, and it's here and there, I'm like, I could stop the whole thing right now. And I'd sometimes feel that way on a stressful day where I'm like, if I decided we're just stopping, we would stop.
Everybody stop. Like,
we would
I want
stop.
A burger. Just bring me a bacon burger and then we starting
to get it. It would actually happen. It's a weird thing in our society.
Well, because you're directing something, like, it's going to happen.
It's madness.
And so with all that said, can you really blame other people for treating us like children? Because that's what it is. Yeah. You're a 2-year-old. You're a temperamental 2-year-old. And you will get your way whether or not you like it. And everyone's going.
And everyone's aware of it, too. So it's like, even when maybe you're wrong sometimes and you're like, well, and now they're like, crap, he doesn't know what he's doing with this scene.
When you literally think about that type of thing, because I remember being like an intern and a PA on like television shows and stuff. Yeah. They like, and it's when it comes to talent, like directors are one thing, but talent, like
a whole
other world of the babying that happens.
Oh my God,
and you wonder, and it's like everybody goes, I don't understand why, like Miley Cyrus, Justin Bieber, like why do they become the people that they do? And it's like, well, when you literally grow up in an environment where you are the king, you are Joffrey, you are literally like, everybody is like bowing to you at every moment, doesn't treat you like a normal human being. Mm-hmm. like, and you get anything you want, and you're taught that you're supposed to tell them everything you want, and it's just like they don't know how to act in society anymore.
Yeah, not to get into the controversial aspect of bullying, but there's something to be said about knowing your place in the universe.
I couldn't agree more.
Just facing the reality that you're just a single person in a massive machine.
Yep.
And yeah, when you grow up with literally every single person, you live, one, in a fake world full of people who do everything you want, will be completely gentle around you, and just will, and then you just go and pretend to be another person, and then a ton of money shows up. Like, can you imagine that for, like, from the ages of three? Like, I'd probably be a serial killer. Like, I don't even know.
Yeah,
like,
I think it's healthy. No way I'd be a normal person.
And you could get away with it.
And I could get away with it. They'd be like, oh, but he was really good in the new system.
Who's the comedian that did a bit about, like, but he could dance? You know what I'm talking about? Where it's just somehow, like, the fact that someone can dance just forgives everything.
If you're talented, you can get away with a lot.
Yeah. Well, no, but, like, specifically, they brought out, like, dancing. There's, like, Chris Brown's, like, beat the hell out of Rihanna. Like, yeah, but he can dance.
He can moonwalk.
That's, like, Michael Jackson. It's like, yeah, but he could dance. And like, what is it about dancing? And then all of a sudden, absolves you from all of your sins.
So when are we taking dance classes?
That's what I was saying. I have this idea. It's one of those ideas that will never come to fruition. But I'm like, if there's ever like a 2-week hiatus or a break where it just like can disappear for a while, it's like there's something to be said for 2 weeks intensively, like just learning how to just be a motherfucking good ass dancer, like
like ballroom dancing.
It might take more than 2 weeks.
What do you want?
But hold on. But I would say 2 weeks, you could certainly go from having no moves whatsoever to having at least some coordination.
You could walk out with
probably
all good
moves.
It's just like
this. I disagree. 14 days intensive dance study.
I feel like some of these guys who can dance have been doing it for a
while. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you're gonna go out and just crank a moonwalk.
I'm understanding what you're saying because I have no ability to do even one move. So for like 14 days.
There's a whole library of videos
if you can dance even a little.
All Freddie wants to do is then come back 2 weeks later and go to like a morning meeting. Big guys, this way.
Hit it.
I kind of want to fund this experiment now.
It's like, whoa, dang, Freddie, dance. I got shot a guy in the way. It's like, yeah, but you can dance. Well, because dance is always one of those funny things too, where it's like it is the most like. Is like the most attractive thing ever, right? It's like the dudes who can dance are just like, yeah, that's attractive, right? But somehow at the same time, it's also the number one thing that's like, if you went to your dad and your dad, I want to take dance lessons, like, get out, you're not my son, right? It's like, on one hand, the one thing that can get you the ladies is the one thing your dad is like.
It is interesting when you think about that, and the thought of like, oh, dancing, and like you being able to dance is something that like you're expected as a guy to know. You need to go to a school dance or something, unless you were me growing up so religious and odd, but didn't go to a single dance my whole life. But when you do, and now it's always that worry, and they make TV shows about the stress of dancing. Well, you're right. Like, what are you supposed to do? Like,
if you want kids in high school, if you want to get banged in college, tell you what. Unless you really think you're gonna be a quarterback,
listen,
then
say this slowly. Yeah, you gotta say it slowly.
Unless you think you're going to be a quarterback in the pros instead of doing football, dance.
Yep.
Right? Unless you're going to be on that college team, what's the point of, like, maybe. But, like, man, I'll tell you what, you go to a college dance, like, college party, and you can bust out Chris Brown moves and not do the other parts of Chris Brown, like,
yeah,
you'll
right.
be
just the moves.
Fine, just the moves. Yeah.
You're going to suffer for it in high school. You will suffer for it.
But it's worth it. You can talk to any girl you want because it's like you want to dance, like, and then you're set.
You had some sick moves.
Well, but
yeah, that's true.
If you had that,
exactly.
Actually, it's a good point. Breakdancing. If you're like, it's a specific type of dance.
If you can spin on your head, people will like you.
That's a specific thing. You have to be super good at breakdancing.
Yeah.
There's an exact threshold. What the hell is this kid doing? That's the coolest kid I've ever seen. And it's like a single moment where that happens. Where I was like, yeah, if you're like pretty good at salsa, you'd probably still impress people. They'd be like, I can't do that. That's pretty cool. It's like,
wow,
exotic.
Very exotic.
There's no gray area.
Horrible to amazing.
it's always awkward when this is like a guy busts out breakdancing. You're like, what the hell is he doing?
Oh, it's so sad.
Like, is he having a seizure? Guys, give him some space. Oh no, just
breakdancing places all the time.
Yeah, Matt's big into the battle scene down in Southern California. You usually see him lurking in the back, reporting on underground blogs.
Who's up tonight?
K Rad and Jay Dizzle. Oh, this is a big one.
Anyone want to listen to Simpsons on my tape?
Got all the episodes.
Oh man, I think we've reached the end.
Sorry, we didn't do a break. This was like the most like nonsense.
Yeah, we just started.
We usually do a 30-minute break.
We usually break in the middle at some point. We'll add one in at some point. But we've come to the end of a very spirited hour covering quite a bit.
Just, just
we need you guys back on. Yeah. I want to hear more weird Disney,
Disney
stories.
We can do. We can have two other podcasts: the Disney podcast, the web history podcast.
But I think we covered a lot of ground with you guys. I don't know. I'm just saying.
I don't know how one thing led to another.
We started with Natazu and ended up over here.
Oh yeah,
Natazu.
Oh man, so. Our guests tonight, Ben and Rafi Fine, they have a couple of series. They got a whole bunch of series. Excuse me.
React.
Kids React, which, by the way, just apropos of nothing. Yes, by the way, you sent an email asking when the time is.
But, dude, they're like shooting in a few days. I like booked. There's like a lot of YouTube stars.
If you want me there, just let
me
know.
I will let you know.
Freddy.
What's the best way? I try every single way.
Do you have
my
phone?
I texted you.
He doesn't respond to us.
No.
Anyway, it's okay.
We'll talk after this. Okay.
I want to watch you watch videos, Freddy.
We got Kids React. You guys have My Music Season 2.
Every Tuesday.
Out now on the YouTube channel, which it is.
YouTube.com/TheFineBros. You got to watch episode 6 to see
That's right. I was in episode 6 just killing it as an EDM DJ with an incredible facial prosthetic.
Some sick tracks,
and
man.
Just the raddest beats dropping it nonstop. What are you guys' Twitters?
At the Fine Bros.
Yeah,
we share
it. Boom. There you go. There you go. Well.
Awesome, guys.
Thanks a bunch for coming
in. Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Good times.
Yeah, love seeing your space, the studio, everything. You guys are amazing.
Well, yeah, you guys are great. We're going to have you on again. There's way too much stuff that we still need to cover. Thanks very much for coming down. And, well, I'm Freddie.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Dez.
And we'll talk to you guys later.